Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism. Give it all a good hard shake and pour. Dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to you all. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining me for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo. In a world where we ask, was anyone not deeply affected by RFK's speech? I could literally hear the globalists screech. Are they getting ready to kill Charles the King? Is the royal shimmer losing its bling? But the question that keeps us all up every night and guessing, when will the clients of the Epstein start fessing? As always, my darlings, we try to do all of this stuff that we say we're going to do with as much dignity and decorum as can be mustered on any given day. And we are rarely successful, I will admit to that, but we are honor bound to give it our best shot. And on this show, the Metaphysical Martini Show, we do love the odd shot now and then. Yes, we do. In fact, let me take a sip of today's drinky-poo to see if it's a winner or a sinner. Hold on, darlings, don't go away. Sipping is happening. Very important stuff here. Hold on. Ooh, I can live with that. In fact, that can move in. That's rather nice. More about that towards the end of the show when we do our cocktail du jour thing. Ah, welcome back, Martini Heads. Lovely to be with you again. Mwah. Those of you who are new, who are joining us for the first time, well, a very warm welcome to you. Be advised, however, this show is politically incorrect so as not to erode the intellect. Martini Heads are simple folk from all walks of life who share common values such as common sense, common courtesy, common decency. We are American patriots, and we are spirit-centered, and we believe that we are all part of all that is, supreme cosmic intelligence, creator, God, the spaghetti monster of bigness, I don't know. We have many names for it, and we all have different relationships with it, but we all know that we are part of it. We also believe America has a sacred purpose in our ascension, and our part in it is to do whatever needs to be done to restore the Republic, to destroy the deep state machinery, and restore power to the American people who, I have to say, have done a piss-poor job of deserving such an honor lately. Yes, you know who you are. But moving on. On today's show, we have QAC, which is questions, answers, and comments. And that, of course, is the reason we started the show, to hear people's points of view, to see how much awareness there was out there, and to give those who felt unheard or somehow disenfranchised a voice, a community of informal weirdos who love their country. Welcome, darlings. And after we do that quacky thing, we have a tiny pat of poetry where I share my, usually my original and rather brilliant poetry. And we follow that with awesome American civics and history. And we end, as always, with a cocktail of the day, le cocktail du jour. And just a heads up, if you are new to the show, I do get a bit tiddly toward the end of the show because I consume the entire cocktail, you see. Now, before we get going, let me just shout out to Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, for making possible the intergalactic distribution of this show. Mysticalwares.com. online or on location, you'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. And I have to say, they're such jolly, decent people. And they're wonderful when they pack stuff. They're very careful with that. And they also have a massive collection of shungite. Shungite is hot, people. Everybody needs shungite. And mysticalwares.com is shungite central. So head over there, because if you need shungite, they have shungite. Right, let's get on with the show. And let's start off as we almost always do, because I'm, you know, relatively sober at this point. It's time for Quack Questions, Answers, and Comments. If you would like to share your thoughts with the weirdos across the globe, send your emails to me. I am Ani at aniavedisian.com. And please remember to let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall refer to you as omit personal details. If you don't do computers, and some people don't, send me a postcard. Cosmic Ani, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon 97070, USA. Okay, my darlings, let us shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and see what pops out. Ah, shaky, shaky, ah, shaky, shaky. What do we have? Let's pull this one out because it's already in my hand. And this is from Maureen, who lives in Telluride. Oh, how very posh. How very après-ski. Hello, Maureen in Telluride. And she says, I would love to start using tuning forks or bowls to start bringing in positive energy and healing frequencies into my life. And she's asking, which suppliers of tuning forks and frequency bowls do you recommend? And she's also asking, what is your suggestion, Ani, on how to use them for their greatest positive impact on our physical body and perhaps soul? Maureen, in the beginning was the word, maybe not an actual word, perhaps like, oh, hello, it's God here, but, you know, a sound that created the cosmos. It was actually silent, the word. If we get down to the minutiae of our bodies, down to the smallest particle that makes us what we are, it is frequency, and so it has sound. Ergo, I think learning to use the tuning forks and singing bowls is a very good idea, and it should be on every spiritual warrior's curriculum. That said, I agree with you. I don't think it's a good idea just to go out and buy whatever your local store has in stock. I know from my own experience, Maureen, there is a learning curve with both the forks and the bowls more so, and it can take quite a bit of time to master. My suggestion is to first find a singing bowl tuning fork class near you, take the class, connect with people who can teach you and guide you. I am not that person. I use sound frequency in my healing, but I use my voice in energy work. And although I did spend the first few years of my life with the bowls, I have limited experience this past decade or so. I just don't use them anymore. But I think they're very valuable. I think if you're attracted to them, you should definitely go for it. And there are so many types of bowls. So you need to do a little bit of research, which is why I love to talk to people who do these things for a living. I mean, you know, they're going to ask you, what kind of bowl do you want? Do you want a Thado? Do you want a Jambati? What about a Ramura or a Manipuri or a Lingam? Or what about a pie-lipped one or a void? Or, oh, do you want metal versus crystal? You know, and what is it for? That does make a difference. Are you going to use it just for meditation? Or are you going to use it for actual healing work? Or is it a ritual that you want? You know, a ritual offering or some kind of ritual? Are you going to use it for prayer? It's a whole world of mesmerizing sounds and adventures into consciousness. I really love the sound of the bowls, to be honest. I just love them. And I do play, you know, CDs of them, you know, in my background. I enjoy listening to them. I just don't play them anymore. There is a website that's very good for 101 for this. It's called shantibowl.com, S-H-A-N-T-I bowl, B-O-W-L.com. It's very, very basic in 101, but it's a good intro. I would check that out, shantibowl.com. In terms of which supplier, I'm a little out of touch to be able to advise, so I won't. The greatest positive impact on us, you know, with these bowls is to balance our energies, isn't it? And uplift us to meet our higher selves. Because when we're in that state, generally the healing happens on its own. And meditating with them improves focus and it improves concentration. And, you know, it makes us alert, makes us present. And what a wonderful world it would be if everyone was alert and present and not running around like headless chickens. Thanks for checking in with us, Maureen. I hope you find somebody locally. And when you get really good, send us an audio clip of you playing your bowls. I would like that very much. Thank you. Okay, let's take out something else from the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity. But let me have a little drinky poo first, because this is rather nice. I haven't pulled out too many cocktails I didn't like, but the ones that I didn't like, yeah, they were disgusting. So I do well in my failures. I'm very good at failing. Here's another question, and this is from Omit Personal Details. And Omit Personal Details says, Arnie, have you read the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion? If so, what do you make of it? All right, here we go again. With every 6 months or so, somebody asks this question. So here's my response. No surprises here. Of course, I have read it. Of course, I have read it. And back in the day, I bought several copies in case it became hard to find on the way to being banned by those who continue the legacy of the aforementioned elders. Here's my take on it. I very much doubt the bad guys would go to the bother of writing a manual detailing the steps they will take to corrupt the collective psyche. It's a bit like, oh, look, I'm Dr. Evil, and here is my four-phase plan to dominate the people of planet Earth. No, that doesn't make sense. But, big but, it says, you know, I have to say the protocols are exactly that, a handbook for Illuminati recruits. You know, here's their table of contents. Are you ready? Okay, who are the elders? The basic doctrine of the elders, the economic wars, methods of conquest, materialism replaces a religion, despotism and modern progress, takeover technique, worldwide wars, provisional government, re-education, preparing for power, the totalitarian state, controlling the press, distraction, more assault on religion, ruthless suppression and brainwashing, abuse of authority, arrest of opponents, rulers and people, financial program, loans and credit, the power of gold, instilling obedience, and finally, qualities of the ruler. Ooh, this just sounds like something from Azeroth or one of those computer games where you're fighting the orcs and they're trying to take over the humans and they're just dreadful people. Did I leave anything out? I don't think so. I think not. And I do believe that the, you know, aforementioned accurately reflects current events. You might want to pick up a copy. You know, it's quite the page-turner, the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. Now, let us always remember, let us not confuse the entire Jewish race with the Zionists. Because in this context, when we talk about Zionists, we're referring to the Khazarian Mafia, the KM, the people who were not really Jewish, but adopted that faith and corrupted it. So who wrote it? And whether or not, as some claim, the protocols are minutes from actual Zionist meetings is up for debate. But a copy of the book in which they were first embodied was published in Russia, 1905, 1906, by a bloke called Sergei Nilus. But, you know, during the, you know, Kerensky regime, and beyond that, actually, owning a copy could send you to prison, and all known copies in Russia were destroyed. And that, I think, says a lot for the authenticity of the content. Do I consider it essential reading for the awake and aware citizen of today? Actually, I do. Yes, I do. I think it's useful as an addition to your collection because it's a massive dot connector, and I do love dot connectors. And also, for decades, I have talked about the dark establishment and its evil agenda. The protocols spell them out in some detail. You know, if I have time at the end of the show, I can give you a few snippets just for the heck of it. But, you know, whether or not it is the actual minutes or if somebody put this together just to be very, very clever, it's 100% accurate about totalitarian takeover. It really is. Protocols of the Elders of the Learned Elders of Zion. You might have to work hard to find a copy these days. And if you do, if you find somebody who has many copies, drop me a line and let me know, because I'm down to my last six and I'm not giving them away. Don't ask me for a copy. You cannot have it. But if you find a stash, let me know. I'll exchange it for some cold hard cash. Anyway, thanks, Omit, for bringing that up. What else came in this week? You know, we had quite a few, but not as many as some weeks. This is from Kent in Boise, Idaho, who says, Ani. Yes, Kent. Cries of joy from our household when we heard RFK finally saw the light and took a seat at America's big boy table. The white hats sure took their time. I can see why now, and I applaud them for their pit bull determination. We could see an actual unity party long before your prediction of at least a decade, Annie. Keep up the good work. Your jokes helped my family to wake up. Yeah, Kent, I couldn't agree more. At the start of this, you know, I thought, oh, what the heck, people? People are so propagandized, you know, just take over. Just take over, imprison everybody and blah, 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 do all those things and explain it all later. But I see now the error of my ways. The long and winding road back to sanity makes for less chaos after the change of government. And as we know, this is not just another four-year election, darlings, is it? No, this is light versus dark, sovereignty versus slavery for the foreseeable future. What fun, hey? Now, while, yes, RFK at the big boy table, it makes me happy. Unity toward a common goal. The future of the Republic, it makes me happy. It boosts my spiritual stamina. While I have no doubt, like Trump's dark, I believe outbreaks of violence to be inevitable in the next few months. Of course, location makes a big difference. But we do travel in the course of our work. We visit family, we visit friends, we run errands. So let's kick our situational awareness up a notch, shall we? You know, family meetings are a good idea. You know, how well do you know your closest neighbor? If you don't have a prepper pantry, do you have enough food and hygiene items to say 4 weeks, to last you say 4 weeks? Should it become unsafe to leave your house? Now, these are all sensible precautions, darling. This is not paranoia. Don't ever prep out of paranoia. We prep so we never have to experience paranoia from starvation, thirst, and civil war. So, yes, I have to admit, Bobby joining Big T was a tearjerker moment for me. Big men with big minds doing the right thing for our country and for the future of our citizens. Settling their differences aside, you know, and realizing that when it comes to the big stuff, the core values from which all other values stem or should stem, they're on the same page. And this makes me happy. And it refreshes my we are on the right track meter. Just remember that when they tried to kill Trump and they missed, timelines changed. And when Bobby and the Patriots on the other side decided to come on board and form this unity party, the timelines changed. And it's going to be holy hell for a while, but it's going to be worth it. Let's take another item from the fishbowl. Let me have a little drinky poo. This is from Tandy. Hello, Tandy. No location given. And Tandy asked, Dear Ani, RFK promised he would change everything healthcare within two years. Sorry, darling. He promised he would change everything healthcare within 2 years. Is this realistic? No. No, it's not realistic. But he didn't actually say that. I think he said something along the lines of we would see a difference within 2 years and a significant change, you know, within four. Is that doable? Yes. The truth, you see, the truth is things can be changed in the blink of an eye. We have grown accustomed to government moving like Jabba the Hutt, slow, smelly, lumbering beast, leaving slime trails and getting nothing done. But if we adopt the take no prisoners approach, which is the correct approach to dealing with swamp creatures planning the demise of mankind, if we take no prisoners, we can delete big chunks of useless administration in a matter of a few days. We can get a lot done from the get-go. Let's disband the CIA completely, completely. Let's clean up the FBI. Let's restore farming and water rights. Let's encourage citizens to grow kitchen and community gardens. Let's get rid of the effing Federal Reserve and the IRS and come up with a flat tax on non-essential items, something we can all live with. Let's teach American civics and history in schools again. Let's teach finance again and educate folks on living within their means, because credit card debt has ruined many a life. I listened to Bobby's speech. He did not hold back. Our water is poisoned. Our food is poisoned. Our medicine, which ends up in our drinking water supply, is poison. Most illnesses are side effects from modern medicines. The healthcare system is an arena for worshipping pain and identifying with our often incorrectly diagnosed conditions. Hospitals are the palaces of pain that we erected to worship our pain, feeding our egos. There's a lot to be changed in medicine. Now, if you go back to the old approaches and whatever, the hair of the dog, you know, the hair of the dog thing, that works in certain cases. And I do certainly understand the homeopathic approach. But you see, these vaccines, all of them are killer shots, all of them. Anything good from way back when has been hijacked in favor of a disease to, you know, you. Good Lord, I mean, what they do to you now? You've got a disease, you've got to treat it, and then eventually you end up in a very expensive hospice anyway. So it's like disease to hospice to death approach. And in Canada, dear God, Canadians, when are you going to stop being so polite and just get your shotguns and do something about this? The government will happily kill you for free if you can't bear to live under its totalitarian regime. They will. They will make it possible for you. There's more than a touch of Soylent Green in there, you know. RFK laid out the entire globalist agenda. And if that doesn't convince people to do some research, at the very least, check a few things out, then we have to accept those folks are not moving forward with us. And if they're your friends and family, you know, I am very sorry for you, but if they've been like this for the past 5 years, you're probably sick and tired of them anyway and not having any problem walking away. I'm certainly not. This administration, a puppet of New World Order, taxes its citizens, sends the money abroad to line the pockets of arms dealers and foreign politicians. Our infrastructure sucks, and we're propping up foreign regimes. RFK did not hold back with regard to American cabal activities across the globe. Women and children of both sexes, are being trafficked for sex, for ritual, for sacrifice, for body parts. The deep state players, you know, the Clintons, the Obama bot, everyone in over what's left in the apology for the Democratic Party and the money-loving cowardly rhinos, you know, a species whose extinction I welcome. They're all in on it. Folks, whatever you think Luciferianism is, I assure you, it's much worse. Depraved does not begin to describe it. Depraved is stage one for these people. Every single one of them needs to be arrested, tried, sentenced, and for many, the sentence will be death. Because for as long as these swamp creatures of unbelievable evil live, even in jail, they will have influence. When RFK made his speech, all I could say was, "What do we tell the lords of death? Not today, you bastards. Not today, and not any day, and never on our watch. All hail the light. Spiritual warriors, we march at dawn." You know, it can be done, Tandy, and it can be done quickly. And I believe with the team that Trump is assembling now, actual patriots who will guide him in the right direction, when T says go, the army will support the border patrol in shutting down the border and sending illegals, you know, that are here to make trouble back to whatever void they came from. And I have this on good authority, and I know this to be true. There are thousands of military veterans across the states who are very well networked and meet regularly, and they're waiting for the go-ahead to serve in whatever capacity is deemed necessary. So bottom line, the people who created Trump derangement syndrome are Luciferians. They are adrenochrome drinkers. They are the ones having sex with children. They are the ones sacrificing children on the altar of darkness and using their body parts. They are the ones who kidnap young women, keep them underground, and as soon as they've had their first period, use them as brood mares until their insides fall out and they die of infection, terrified, alone, in the bottom of a pit somewhere. They are the ones who think of we the people as cattle, as vermin, fit to eat bugs and to obey whatever the mighty television box commands. I have to ask, how, in the name of all that is whole, holy, and wholesome, would you vote for such filthy people? That is not just brainwashing, it's a specific type of brainwashing. I'm very familiar with it. It's called dark magic, black magic, blood magic. And if you know this is happening and you just sit back and do nothing, hoping it will go away, what are you even doing today on this planet? Tandy, courage, mon ami. We got this. El Bobby and El Trumpo are united against El Diablo. And I am on such a presidential high right now, I might just pass out. And in case I do pass out, let me have a sip of my drinky poo. Hold on, darlings. Hold on. It's such thirsty work podcasting. Thanks for that letter, Tandy, because, you know, it gave me a chance to rant and pontificate. And we know how much I love to do those things. Let's take some more questions. Let's take some more questions and let's be totally caught up with the questions today. Let's see. This is from Chrissy in Baker City, Oregon. Baker City has a reputation for being haunted. I have to check it out one day. It's way over on the east. It's a bit of a drive, but I should get there one day. So anyway, Chrissy from Baker City, Oregon says, "Do you know of a good prayer to use when I feel overwhelmed and unable to cope? There are days I do not want to leave my home. I don't feel safe." You know, I am a Christian. But I'm very open-minded. I would like to have, I think she's written quite a bit here, so I'm trying to sort of shorten it up. But Chrissy would like a Christian prayer. I have one, actually. Well, I have several, darling, because it's my job, you see. I have several, but this is one of my favorites, and it's from St. Patrick. And it's an extract from a longer prayer called St. Patrick's Breastplate. Now, he wrote it with the word Christ. No problem there with Christians at all. But if you're not a Christian, or if you're a, you know, a secular humanist or whatever, you can change that word to light. Or if you want to use God, you can do that. But I'm reading the original. So, Chrissy, I understand, you know, what it's like not to feel safe from time to time. But you see, here's the thing, my darling. Being a Christian, or being a woman of faith, or being somebody who absolutely believes that their Creator created them and has given them all these marvelous qualities that we don't bother using, we shouldn't fear anything. I mean, we either believe God is great and greatness created us and therefore we are greatness, or we don't. There really isn't an in-between. God doesn't make inferior beings. Please, don't be afraid. When you read this prayer, read it as if you're not reading it to God or to Christ. Read it as if Christ is with you, arms around you, enfolding you in divine love, very much an intrinsic part of you. So I'm going to read this extract for you. And you gave me your email, Chrissy. So I went ahead this morning and I also emailed a copy for you. Didn't really know if I was going to pick this today or not. But either way, I did. You know, I do read these letters first, you know, people. You know, they do come into my email. I do have to print them out, smoosh them up and actually physically stick them in the bowl. So here we go. Chrissy, this is for you. And it's beautiful. Christ with me. Christ before me, Christ behind me, Christ within me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ to my right, Christ to my left, Christ when I lie down, Christ when I sit down, Christ when I arise, Christ in the heart of every man and woman who thinks of me, Christ in the mouth of everyone who speaks of me, Christ in every eye that looks upon me, and Christ in every ear that hears me. Now, how beautiful is that? And how wonderful to know that the Christed realm is an actual realm. Something that our consciousness can occupy if we would just relax and remember that we are God. Because what else would God create except a manifestation of itself? And if there was a God that created toys to play with, you'd be a twit to worship that God, wouldn't you? My faith turned into direct knowing many years ago. I don't need to be, and I'm going to sound really sanctimonious here, and I don't mean to, but because that really isn't me. Everyone thinks I'm arrogant. I have an English accent. Why is that considered arrogant? You know, my faith turned to direct knowing. I don't pray to God. I assume that God knows everything. I'm sort of there in conversation with God, discussing how to proceed. I don't have to start a formal ritual of quieting my mind down so that I can be ready to talk to the divine. And what I'm experiencing is a beautiful thing. It's taken me my entire life pretty much to get there. But it's a side effect of meditation and learning to reclaim your mind in silence. That's why we go on and on and on about deep breath meditation. Do you listen? No, you don't, but I wish you would. Chrissy, I hope that prayer, you know, helps you. And go look it up, St. Patrick's Breastplate, and read the whole thing. Alrighty, people, let's give the fishbowl another shuffle and let's see what else pops out today. This is from Amelia, who used to live in East Ridge, Tennessee, but is now on the road in her modified Nissan cargo van. Dear Ani, after being laid off 3 times in as many years, I decided to leave the matrix as best I could. I sold my belongings and bought a cargo van, fixed it up some, and decided that would be my new home for the foreseeable future. I am free for the first time in my life. I go where I please, do as I please, and there ain't a soul around to tell me no. I have some money in savings, and I pick up work here or there. This will be my 6-month anniversary, and I could not be happier. I don't have a question for you. I wanted to share my joy with you. You don't need stuff to be happy, and you don't always need a permanent bricks and mortar home. True freedom, Ani, is managing your time as you see fit and answering nobody. I enjoy your show, and I want you to know that I make a perfect martini with gin every Friday night, 3 olives, Holy Trinity, and always raise my glass to you. Amelia, what a wonderful letter. Thank you. Thank you for taking time out to write it. Thank you for sharing your joy with us. And I couldn't agree more. You know, the norm is a house and 2.4 kids, but why? You know, raising children, that's a sacred trust. You shouldn't be pressured into it just because it's considered the norm. And with so many people working from home, why not work on the road from your modified cargo van? Why not spend a few years touring the USA while you work? I love the idea. I think I'm a little too old to commit to 100% camper van life. But if I had the option to stay in hotels when I needed to, you know, that would work well for me. A small camper large enough to sleep in if I chose to, but small enough to drive around town. You know, a while ago, a few of my people in the Telegram group, we wanted to go and visit one of our members in Prineville, and we were all going to rent some RVs and stuff. So we started to look at the price of RVs. An A-class RV starts at about $185,000. Wow. I would say that buys a great many nights in clean hotels. Thanks, Amelia. Thanks, Sender. Drop us a line from time to time, please. Send postcards. Let me know where you are. Okay. And we'll take one more question before we move on. And this is from Rafi, R-A-F-F-I, Rafi, who asks, do you think RFK is a double agent? Okay, drink time. Drink time. Drink time. I'll be right back. Hold on. No. No, Rafi. I do not think RFK is a double agent. I think he is the last knight of Camelot who went through agonizing nights of mental torture before knowing he had no choice but to put America first. His speech was masterful, man. I mean, I already talked about it, but, you know, he laid it out in great detail, every evil inflicted upon we the people by the deep state machinery minions. He did not hold back. He knows it's all or nothing at this point, and I believe he is willing to pay the ultimate price, as are we all. Because it's not a commitment if you bail at the last minute, is it? Now, Rafi, I've thought about it. I've thought about a lot of things. I mean, the thinking, I'm surprised my brain hasn't exploded over the last 5 years. But I know we have one heck of a shit show going on for about a year or more ahead of us. But this is a game changer, the RFK coming to the table. It's a very good game changer. And we need game changers because mankind on this planet, I've mentioned this before, has not reached critical mass in the consciousness shift needed to ascend. So let's just call it all that is. All that is has rallied and is pulling out all the stops to make sure Earth's final battle against the Lords of Dread is absolutely bloody epic. And I'm really looking forward to that, actually. Thank you, Rafi. All is well. Do not worry. Vote for Trump. Everybody, go out there, vote for Trump. Forget your partisan affiliations. You will not have a country if you don't vote for Trump. Don't wait another 5 years, please, and let that happen to see if your conspiracy theory friends were actually right or wrong. You're all on the fence right now. I can hear you jiggly wiggly. Oh, but Camelot, Camelot. Camelot is dead, darlings. And if you don't want America to die, forget Democrat, forget Republican, forget Libertarian. I'm a Libertarian, but the party's crap, you know, moving on. Just remember, you're voting for America. It doesn't matter if you don't like Trump. Oh, he does mean tweets. He's fighting an evil we have no vocabulary for. They deserve a lot more than mean tweets. Don't you think? Don't you think? I do. All right. Well, that's it for Quack this week. And I am getting better on the kazoo. So thanks, Martini Heads. Thanks for taking the time to write in and share your thoughts. I'm glad you're thinking. Martini Heads across the globe appreciate it. And we raise our glasses to you. I am raising my glass to you. The glass is now going to my lips. Hold on. Ah, lovely, lovely. I do like to say, this show, the Metaphysical Martini Show, is where the Holy Spirit meets top shelf distilled spirits in moderation. And you know what? That's a lovely combo. And now, my darlings, it is time for a tiny pat of poetry. Yes, folks, after a hard day's shamaning, I like nothing better than coming home, having a nice cup of tea or a small drinky-poo, and writing really bad, yet occasionally brilliant, non-peer-reviewed poetry. Today's offering is a little something I wrote a couple of weeks ago or so, while I was praying for RFK to do the right thing and take his rightful seat at America's table. I was visualizing it having happened. That was my prayer. And my prayer, of course, was answered. Thank you, God. God, you rock, and you also paper, and you also scissors. You're just amazing, God. We're very happy to have you as the God of our universe. I bet you knock spots off all the other universal gods. So I wrote this poem called Camelot Has Fallen. And I'm going to share it with you now. But I'm really feeling the brandy and the rum combination at the back of my throat right now. I might add a little more simple syrup to this next time. Hold on. My throat's on fire, darlings. Here we go. Camelot Has Fallen by Ani Avedisian. Copyright August 2024. Put away romantic notions and tame those drama whore emotions. Once there was a realm with good men at the helm, but those days are gone. Light faded, money exchanged, honor traded. Camelot is dead. They cut the round table for firewood. They melted the swords for small change as priorities were rearranged. Camelot fell when the knights ran away from the lords of dread who now hold sway. Take down the pretty banners and streamers and knock some sense into the dolts and the dreamers. The past is but a fairy tale of noble feats of dragons and of giant whales. A new golden realm is now ours to design. It requires vision, dedication, spirit, and spine. Never were truer words spoken. We are at that place now where everything changes. We either go forward for infinity, ascending into all the higher, dimensional frequencies. But if we let these people, these cackling hyenas and these dreadful globalists take over this country and we don't do anything about it, it's going to be very difficult to get it back. I don't want to be in a Texas bunker eating spam, counting my reloads, going out and raiding state governments and whatever. We don't want to get to that place. If we let these people take the country, it's 1,000 years of darkness, and I can't live that long. So I understand people don't want the old Camelot Democrat Party to go away. Look, I was a Democrat a long time ago, too. Trump was actually a Democrat, in case anybody has forgotten. It's done. It's over. It's been corrupted. The Republican Party, too, has been corrupted. You know, we're still shooting the rhinos. They're everywhere, bloody stampeding bastards. Can't get rid of them. Every time you turn around, there's another bloody rhino there. It's over. The donkey, it's over. The elephant, it's over. We vote Republican now because that's where T and the team is. But it's over. Let's grieve it. Camelot is dead. the old style government where people actually got on and did good things for the people. It's gone. We are fighting for the survival of America and the free world right now. So please don't be petty. If I can change my mind, believe me, anyone can. All right. Now I think it's time. I think it's time for some awesome American civics and history. So I thought long and hard today, what shall I do? What shall I do? Well, you know, we've all been talking about VPs, haven't we? You know, Vance came in. And many people in my camp actually wanted Bobby Kennedy to be the VP. But that's not a good idea, is it? No, because he needs to have you know, health and humanoid services. That's what he needs to have. But there's been a lot of talk about the VP. And I've spoken to a few of my friends who said, you know, I'm not actually sure what a VP does. So I thought, okay, let's do it. Let's focus on the duties of the Vice President of the United States of America. What is the actual role played by a vice president in the modern political era? Let's ask the National Constitution Center. My friends, there are just wonderful people. They always fill me in. The vice president has several unique constitutional roles in the federal government, in addition to their primary role of serving as president temporarily, or for the remainder of a presidential term when there is a vacancy in office or an inability or disability on the president's part. Right, okay, we get that. These additional roles have been spelled out in the Constitution over time and differ in part from the founder's original vision. Well, in my opinion, darlings, the whole damn bloody government differs from the founder's original vision, doesn't it? I mean, what was supposed to be a clean, lean machine overdosed on bureaucratic Botox and exists only to torture we the people. Moving on, back to the Constitution. Excuse me, I'm a little feisty today. Let's talk about the creation of the role of vice president. So during the Constitutional Convention of 1787 in Philadelphia, where they don't make the cream cheese apparently, there was a debate about the role of the vice president in the new system of federal government. There was no such office under the Articles of Confederation, and the founders saw a need for a vice president for several reasons. So I read some stuff by Edward Lawson, a historian. He wrote something in a Law Review article, 2017. He recapped the events in Philadelphia. As part of the compromise that created the Electoral College, the Committee of 11 decided that electors would cast two votes, and the top vote getter would become president. In this way, the vice presidency was created to serve an electoral rather than a government purpose, Larson explains to us, and the second place finisher would assume the office of the vice president. Well, okay, but then the committee was then faced with a second question. And here's the question, and this is the question I'm asking: what was the vice president's actual job? Well, first, the committee decided that the vice president would serve in place of the president when the office became vacant during a term. And historian Larson noted that the designation as vice president gave the title holder nothing to do unless there was a presidential vacancy. So the committee then recommended that the vice president serve as the Senate's presiding officer and could break a tie vote in the chamber. Okay, that's kind of a job. So, of course, objections were raised by several delegates, including Eldridge Gerry. Why do I know that guy? He was a vice president. Well, that's why I know him, obviously. Anyway, moving on, Arnie. You know, he says, we might as well put the president himself at the head of the legislature. The close intimacy that must subsist between the president and the vice president makes it absolutely improper. And yes, Eldridge Gerry became the fifth vice president of America, 1813. So 1813, that makes him, I guess, under Madison, doesn't it? Yeah, it does. Anyway, the Constitution, as ratified on June 21, 1788, included the committee's plans for the vice president, Article 2, Section 1 spelled out that in case of the removal of the president from office or of his death, resignation, or inability to discharge the powers and duties of the said office, the same shall devolve on the vice president. So Congress could also declare by law when a vice president had a disability. Fair enough. Article 1, Section 3 established the vice president's role in Congress. The vice president of the United States shall be president of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they be equally divided. So a presiding officer of the Senate, the vice president initially was given another role. The vice president, along with the Speaker of the House, officially signed or attested to bills sent to the president for signature. And that role would be expanded with the ratification of the 12th Amendment, which was passed after the election of 1800 and led to the nation's first constitutional crisis under the original presidential election system, which was set out in Article 2, Section 1, Clause 3, for those who are interested. Each elector cast two electoral votes, with no distinction made between the electoral votes for president and electoral votes for vice president. So, during the 1800 presidential election, Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr received the same number of Electoral College votes, and the House of Representatives voted to break the tie, choosing Jefferson. 12th Amendment, ratified 1804, fixed the original Article II process by allowing for distinct ballots for the election of the president and vice president. It also required states to send their certified results to the president of the Senate, and the president of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. No mail-in ballots. Now, has the modern role of the vice president changed? During the 19th century, actually, and into the 20th century, vice presidents could, if they wished, take part in Senate proceedings in a rule-making capacity as the presiding officer. And on rare occasions, a vice president could make a long-term consequential decision. In April 1841, Vice President John Tyler was summoned to Washington after the death of President William Harry Harrison. Now, after questions arose from Harrison's cabinet of Tyler's role, assuming Harrison's duties, Tyler took the presidential oath of office from a federal judge and declared he was now acting in the full capacity as president of the United States. That is what we call the Tyler precedent. So the Tyler precedent for presidential succession stood until 1967, when the 25th Amendment formalized that procedure. And by the 1920s, the role of the vice president transitioned to more of an executive branch function. President Warren Harding set out a precedent by inviting his vice president, Calvin Coolidge, to cabinet meetings on a regular basis. And John Nance Garner, Franklin Roosevelt's first vice president, also attended cabinet meetings at the president's request and traveled abroad to represent Roosevelt. Soon, vice presidents were being deployed by sitting presidents as advocates and ambassadors, and both domestically and globally, and also they were used on presidential campaigns as surrogates. So in constitutional terms, what is the biggest change? The biggest change in the position of vice president came with the 25th Amendment's ratification in 1967. The amendment sought to better define the process of determining presidential vacancies and the inability or disability of a president or vice president. So the 25th Amendment's first two sections formalized that Tyler precedent. And the amendment stated that the vice president becomes president in case of the removal of the president from office or of the death or resignation. It also allowed the president and Congress to nominate and approve a new vice president when that office became vacant. 25th Amendment, Section 3, allowed the president to notify Congress that he is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office and to designate the vice president to act as president until the president is able to resume work. However, the amendment section 4 granted the vice president a pivotal role in a situation where a president may be determined as unable to discharge his official duties and has not notified Congress of such. In such a situation, the vice president, in conjunction with a majority of the cabinet or a previously appointed disability board, can notify Congress of the president's inability to serve, and the vice president becomes acting president. Huzzah, ta-da, fabulous. The president then has an opportunity to respond and notify Congress when he is able to serve. And afterward, the vice president, in conjunction with the cabinet or disability board, has the option to object to the president's claim, and a two-thirds vote of the House and Senate can determine the president is indeed unable to serve. In such a situation, the vice president shall continue to discharge the same as acting presidents. Otherwise, the president shall resume the powers and duties of the office. And that's a direct quote from that amendment. So as a footnote, the 22nd Amendment, which was ratified in 1951, combined with the 12th Amendment, includes another restriction on the office of vice president. The 22nd Amendment established term limits for presidents. The last sentence of the 12th Amendment reads, "But no person constitutionally ineligible to the office of president shall be eligible to that of vice president of the United States." Aha! And these provisions bar a president who was elected twice or a person who has served as president for more than 10 years from becoming a vice president. We understand why. However, the office of vice president itself does not have term limits. Woo! Thanks for sitting through that. I shortened it as much as I could. But folks, now we know how many shenanigans happen, you see. And thinking about shenanigans, I'm wondering how many more will the globalists get up to before Vance can step into the VP podium? It's going to get dirty. It's going to get nasty. It's going to get spicy, but I love spicy. My darlings, oh my God, where did the owl go? I finished my drinky poo. Wait, almost. I'm finishing it now. Hold on. Darlings, I finished my drinky poo, and that always means the end of the show. I hope you enjoyed listening in as much as I enjoyed recording it, because I had a blast. I always do. Connecting with Martini Heads every other Wednesday brings me such joy, and the alcohol does the rest. Today's real life drink was Liberty Cocktail, and it's straight out of my dear departed father-in-law's 1935 Mr. Boston official bartender's guide. And here's how you make it. You take, go ahead and take a whole ounce. It says 3/4 ounce, but take a whole ounce of golden rum. And then you need 1.5 ounces of apple brandy, and 1/4 teaspoon, maybe more for taste, of simple syrup. So pour those ingredients into a shaker with cracked ice and stir well. Do not hard shake, it makes a difference. This one needs to be stirred. So stir well, strain, and pour into a 3-ounce cocktail glass. It's pretty, it's lovely, and it's a lovely sipping cocktail. And I'm sure that Vice President-to-be Vance will need a few of these when he takes up office. And I'm pretty sure I'll need one too, because exciting times ahead, my darlings. You know, I don't know much about Vance, but I've been researching a lot. And I just thought this drink, well, assuming he drinks, I know the president doesn't drink. I thought this drink might be something he'd enjoy. You know, it's so clean cut and old school and good old boy. Remember, folks, cocktails are great, and indeed they are, if they are an occasional treat. If you use top quality ingredients and take the art of mixology seriously, one drink is all you need. I'm Arnie, mad as the day is long, Avedisian. This was Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Until we meet again, leave your partisan affiliations behind and do the right thing for the future of one nation and for the future of the free world. Tell the puppet administration to go fandango in Durango. And above all, my dear darlings, let the spirit inhabit that human.
You have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Avedisian, The Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.